Have you ever thought about what the airplane would do if you weren't there? Not the autopilot holding a heading. I mean the airplane deciding on its own that you're about to die and then physically taking the controls away from you to stop it. I'm Vector, and this is Clear Direct on Radio Hangar. Today, we are going to talk about one of the most quietly remarkable pieces of cockpit automation ever fielded. It has a clumsy name, Automatic Ground Collision Avoidance System, AutoGCAS. Say it as AutoGCAS, and you'll sound like you belong at Edwards. Let's break this down, because the engineering behind it is beautiful, and the story of why it took 30 years to build is even better. This segment is supported by AviationSoul.com. They make aviation challenge coins that mark the real milestones. First solo, private pilot, instrument rated, CFI, the whole journey. Beautifully made, heavy in the hand, and built to last a career. If you've got a milestone worth marking, or a hangar friend who just earned one, go take a look. AviationSoul.com. So let's start with the problem, because the problem is grim and it is old. The single biggest killer of fighter pilots is not enemy fire. It is not mechanical failure. It is a category we call controlled flight into terrain. The airplane is working perfectly, every system is green, and it flies straight into the ground with a healthy pilot at the controls. How does that happen to a trained aviator? A few ways: spatial disorientation at night or in weather, where the pilot's inner ear tells him a lie and he flies a perfectly good jet into the dirt, believing he's climbing. Task saturation, where he's heads down in the cockpit, fighting a radar, managing a fight, and simply loses track of how close the ground has gotten. And the ugliest one, G-induced loss of consciousness. We call it G-lock. Pull hard enough for long enough, and the blood drains from your brain. The pilot passes out cold in the seat. The jet keeps flying, nose low, and there's nobody home to recover it. For decades, the Air Force watched young pilots die this way, fully qualified. Perfectly healthy airplanes. Here's the number that started the whole program. Controlled flight into terrain accounted for a huge share of F-16 losses, and the analysis said that a large fraction of those pilots were alive and conscious, right up until impact, and the rest were simply incapacitated. These were savable airplanes, savable people. So the challenge was posed. Could you build a system that recognizes the airplane is about to hit the ground and recovers it automatically, whether the pilot is fighting it, frozen, or completely unconscious? Here's what most people miss about why this is so hard. You would think the hard part is the flying. Roll the wings level. Pull up. A student pilot can describe the maneuver. That part is almost trivial. The hard part is knowing when. Think about it from the airplane's point of view. A fighter pilot's entire job is to fly aggressively close to the edge. Low-level attack runs at 500 feet, screaming across the terrain at the speed of a rifle bullet. Hard diving turns, pointing the nose at the ground on purpose, over and over, all day long. If your automatic system is even a little bit too cautious, it fires when the pilot didn't want it to. It grabs the jet and hauls it skyward in the middle of a legitimate maneuver. And the moment that happens, the moment the system cries wolf even once, the pilot loses trust in it. He'll want it turned off. And a safety system that pilots switch off saves nobody. So the design philosophy became a single ruthless principle. Do no harm. Do not nuisance the pilot. The engineers had a phrase for it. The system must never activate 1 second too soon and never 1 second too late. That is an extraordinarily narrow window, and hitting it is the whole story. The data tells an interesting story about how they solved it. This was not one company. This was a long partnership. The Air Force Research Laboratory, NASA, and Lockheed Martin grinding on the problem across roughly 30 years of development. Some of the earliest flight research flew on NASA's F-16 test beds out in the California desert. Here's the core of how it works. The system continuously does two calculations, dozens of times every second. First, it builds a picture of the terrain ahead and below. It uses a digital terrain elevation database, essentially a detailed three-dimensional map of the entire planet's surface, cross-referenced against the jet's precise position from GPS and its inertial navigation system. So at any instant, the airplane knows exactly how far it is above the real dirt, not just above sea level. That distinction matters enormously in the mountains. Second, and this is the clever part, the system constantly computes an escape maneuver. It asks, in real time, if I had to save this airplane right now, from this exact attitude, airspeed, and G, what would that recovery look like, and how much altitude would it eat? It's modeling the airplane's own recovery performance moment by moment. A heavy jet, low and slow, needs a lot of room to recover. A light, fast jet needs less. The system knows the difference. Then it overlays those two things, the predicted recovery path and the terrain, and it watches for the instant they are about to touch. The pilots who fly it describe it with a wonderful piece of imagery. They call it the scoop or the breakaway on the head-up display. Two chevrons climb up from the bottom toward the center as the ground gets close. When those two chevrons meet in the middle, that's it. That's the last possible instant to recover. And at that instant, if the pilot has done nothing, the system takes the jet. It rolls the wings level automatically. It commands a hard pull up to 5G, following that computed escape path. It flies the airplane up and away from the ground. And then, and this is the part that shows how carefully it was designed, it hands control right back to the pilot and gets out of the way. It does not hold on, it does not baby him. It saves the airplane and returns it. The whole intervention can be over in a couple of seconds. Now here's the moment that turned this from an engineering program into a legend. In 2016, the Air Force released cockpit footage from an F-16. A student pilot in a training engagement pulled hard, sustained the G, and passed out. GLOC. You can hear it on the tape. The jet rolls inverted and the nose drops, and it starts screaming down toward the desert at a rate that no human waking up disoriented could have recovered from in time. Another pilot is on the radio calling his name, telling him to recover. Silence. He's unconscious. The jet passed through something like the mid-teens of thousands of feet, nose down, accelerating past the speed of sound, and the pilot is still out. And then auto GCAS fires. The airplane rolls itself level and pulls, hard. It bottoms out low, genuinely low, and climbs away. And a few seconds later, you hear the pilot come back on the radio, groggy, alive, flying an airplane the machine handed back to him. That single recovery, on that single day, is credited with saving a life and a multi-million dollar jet. And by the time the fleet-wide data came in, the system was credited with saving multiple F-16 pilots and their aircraft. The program was so clearly working that the Air Force accelerated the rollout across the whole F-16 fleet years ahead of the original schedule. That almost never happens with military acquisition. Usually, the fight is to keep a program alive. This one, the operators wanted faster. So, let's talk honestly about the pros and the cons, because this is clear direct, and I don't do one-sided. The promise is enormous, and it's already proven. This is not vaporware. It is fielded, it has a body count in the good sense, lives on the board, and it fundamentally changed the philosophy of what cockpit automation is, for here's the philosophical shift. And I think it's the most important idea in this whole segment. Most automation is designed to reduce your workload. Autopilots, flight management systems, autothrottles, they fly the routine so you can manage the big picture. Auto GCAS is different. It does absolutely nothing ever to reduce your workload. It sits silent for entire careers. It is a last-ditch break glass final safety net that exists for exactly one moment that most pilots will never have. It is automation as a guardian, not a coworker. Now the cons and the caveats, because there are real ones. It is only as good as its terrain data. If the digital map is wrong, or out of date, or missing a newly built obstacle, the system's picture of the ground is wrong. It protects against terrain it knows about. A tower that isn't in the database is a tower it can't see. It depends on accurate position and navigation. Degrade the GPS, corrupt the inertial solution, and the airplane's sense of where it is relative to the terrain degrades with it. And there's a subtler risk, automation trust, in both directions. Trust it too little and you turn it off, and it saves nobody. Trust it too much and you start flying more aggressively than your own skill justifies, leaning on the net, and that's a trap. The system was explicitly designed not to encourage that. It never activates early, so it never rewards sloppiness. But human psychology is human psychology, and the engineers worried about it out loud and the honest limitation. This version recovers from ground collision. The follow-on work, the automatic air collision avoidance system, and the integrated version that combines both tackles the harder problem of two airplanes converging. That's a much messier geometry, because the other airplane has a vote, and it's still maturing. So where is this going? And here's the part that matters to us, the general aviation crowd. The core idea is escaping the fighter world. The magic was never really the 5G pull. The magic was the algorithm. That real-time comparison of a predicted recovery path against a terrain database, tuned so precisely that it never nuisances the pilot. That algorithm does not care whether it's bolted into an F-16 or a light jet or, eventually, a piston single with a modern autopilot and envelope protection. The building blocks are already in our world. A digital autopilot that can command the controls, a terrain database, precise GPS position, synthetic vision that already draws the ground for us on the panel. We already have a taste of the cousin technology. If you fly behind a modern glass panel, you've heard the terrain awareness system yell, "Pull up, pull up." But that's a warning. It tells you, auto GCAS is the next step. It acts. The open question for our end of aviation is not can it be built. It's how much authority we're willing to hand a machine in a small airplane, and how we certify a system that by design overrides the pilot at the last second. The honest timeline? The fighter fleets have it now. The bizjet and advanced general aviation world is where you'll see these ideas migrate over the coming years, riding in on the back of the digital autopilots and envelope protection systems that are already spreading fast. It won't arrive with the name Auto GCAS on the box. It'll arrive quietly as one more thing your airplane simply does. Here's the thought I want to leave you with. The best safety system in the world is the one you forget is there. Auto GCAS is designed to be invisible for an entire career and then on one single afternoon you never planned for, to reach past your unconscious hands and fly the airplane back to the sky. That's not automation replacing the pilot. That's automation standing watch over the pilot. And that's the version of this future I can get behind. My thanks to the Air Force Research Laboratory, NASA, and Lockheed Martin, whose published accounts and released flight footage tell this story far better than any diagram could. You can find more of what we cover over at RadioHangar.com. I'm Vector. Keep your escape path in mind, and fly like the net isn't there. See you next time.